Broadcasting live from our Westlake studios, overlooking the great city of Austin and helping you maneuver through this modern dystopia, it's episode number 91 of Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Coming up this hour at 12:45, the Craft Bag has an NBA team not to forget in these NBA playoffs. At 12:30, Gary Patterson apologizes for dropping the M-bomb a couple times in front of players. And in mere minutes, the Big 12 finally makes a macro decision on the 2020 football season. I'm Trey Elling, and sitting across from me is a Waxahachie native and level-headed Aggie who may speak your death into existence if he doesn't like you, Chad Hastings.
Ah, you damn right. Hope you're having a good Tuesday. Going to be another hot one out there. Be careful. Stay hydrated. Have extra shirts, maybe extra deodorant. And just know that you may sweat. I'm a big fan of the planned sweat. I hate the unscheduled sweat. So today I think it's an unscheduled sweat day. So I hope I don't get into a sweat situation. We shall see. We do have some Big 12 updates to get to. The last Power 5 conference to decide what they are going to do. And right now we still only have one Power 5 conference that's actually let us know what and when they are going to do it. That would, of course, be the Pac-12. We'll get into all of that. Also coming up in about an hour, we'll talk with Jerry Hamilton, now of Inside Texas and ESPN, big-time recruiting guy that if you're in, you know the world of recruiting, you know that name. Jerry, now with Inside Texas. We'll talk to him about this scheduling that the Longhorns have to figure out and Sooners have to figure out and everybody in the Big 12 has to figure out. Also, we will try to throw out a fun sports conversation today because since we're in the state of Texas, since he is a legend.
And it's National Beat Some Ass Day, Chad.
And since Trey and myself are Texas Rangers fans, we should and will celebrate Nolan Ryan Five Punch Day. Five punch, six punch? It was six punches. Well, it's six, I think, at the end. It's
Nolan. You're the numbers guy on this show, so I'll trust you.
It's Nolan Beats Ventura Day. It was today in 1993 that it happened. Nolan Ryan at the time was 46 years old. That might be my favorite stat of the whole thing. He was 46. He was a, and still is, a badass. He could probably still, if he needed to, and if he stretched, I'm going to say Nolan could hit 90 today.
Oh, I thought you were going to go with whose ass he could kick today, because I guarantee you,
ass today.
Nolan Ryan could walk through that studio door right now and take you and I both on, no problem.
No, it would look like a Marvel movie where one superhero beats up like eight guys and just walks away. He would come in and boom, 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 and just walk right out.
He's like a rancher ninja, that Nolan Ryan, with how many asses he can kick at one time.
Exactly. It is easily one of the coolest images in baseball history, if you're a Texas Rangers fan. Robin Ventura had that brief moment. He had that moment of, do I really want to rush Nolan? Yeah, I'm going to have to go. Once he took that next step, it's
that
like,
stutter step that he took at first.
Now I'm committed. I feel committed. All right. And then Nolan made him pay for it. And
he Euro stepped. Coming out of the box is what he did. He took that really large step where you could tell he was still considering what he should do in that moment. And he made the wrong decision, Chad.
And easily my favorite fact, other than the age part of it from Nolan, that's my favorite stat of the story itself. But easily my favorite thing to come out of that story is that Nolan was not thrown out of the game.
I know.
That's my favorite part of that story. It's like, well, what do you mean? What do you mean you didn't throw him out? Yeah, I didn't throw him out. Sorry.
Just speaks to the respect that I guess Nolan had back then. And even to this day, well, maybe not to this day technically, but as of like 6 or 7 years ago when Robin Ventura was the manager of the White Sox, was in Chicago at the time, drink up. He would still get asked about that with regularity, especially because Nolan has remained in the game in some capacity since then. And I think when I found out about this, he was with the Rangers, so the Rangers were coming to visit, and so inevitably he gets asked about it anytime the team that Nolan is currently representing crosses paths with his squad, and then, of course, later on with the Houston Astros. So Robin Ventura will never be able to escape that moment. If nothing else, like even getting his ass kicked, the reason why he probably regrets doing that in 2020 is because he can't escape it.
Right. To get beat up by a dude in his prime, like Michael Spinks can never, ever avoid that mention.
The Mike Tyson?
But that was Mike in his prime. Yeah. That was Mike as the champ in his prime. But when you get your ass beat by a 46-year-old Nolan Ryan, when you get beat up by a, quote, old athlete, there's something different to that. So the discussion today is your favorite old athletes and old athlete moments. Those athletes that push it into an age where they're not supposed to be able to do what they're supposed to do. You're not supposed to be able to throw no-hitters in your 40s. Nolan threw the last two, I believe, as a Ranger. I think that's right, 6 and 7, mm-hmm. as a Ranger. And I guess still to this day, second place is 4.
Yeah.
I think that's right.
That's so bonkers.
So, yeah, and then he also had, like, he and Jack Nicklaus have a similar stat to me. Jack Nicklaus has a ton of runner-ups in majors and golf. He's got like 18 or 19 of those in addition to the 18 he already had.
Good Lord.
But I'd swear Nolan Ryan's got like 15 or 20 one-hitters.
Yeah.
In addition to all the no-hitters. So, but your favorite old athlete moments, Nolan Ryan over Robin Ventura, it's got to be right there at the top of my list. If it's not at the top, it's right there close. I remember it. I remember the coverage of it. I remember that would have been the summer that I graduated high school.
Okay.
I was class of 93. So I've just graduated high school. I was in Waxahachie. And so I was getting all the Dallas coverage of it, too.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I bet I saw it 85 times that day with all the replays. I got to see Dale Hansen talk about it, and I got to see all those sports guys in Dallas go after it.
I'm trying to think of the best old guy examples in each sport. Like, for hockey, I think you have the obvious.
It's Gordy.
Gordy Howe.
Yeah.
Because he was playing professional hockey in some way, shape, or form into his 60s, right? He stepped out on the ice in his 70s.
I hockey experts could help us out here, but I do believe that in his 60s he was on some kind of a minor league team.
I think he was on a Houston team at one point in those later years. Like the Arrows, maybe.
Yeah, Gordy was a badass.
And by the way, he was still making the Gordy Howe hat trick happen, too. Goal, assist, and kicking some young buck's ass.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
In football, we maybe have the best examples happening right now with Tom Brady and Drew Brees continuing to play at the level that they have for the last few years.
Yeah, because me growing up, it was always like kickers.
Blanda?
The George Blanda era was before I started watching the NFL. Blanda was like kicker quarterback and then became just a kicker. And then during my life, guys like Gary Anderson, Morton Anderson, Jason, what was that kid's name? Jason Hansen for the Lions.
The Lions, yeah.
I swear he kicked for 25 years.
He kicked for a while.
It was usually...
Heck, we have one here in Austin that kicked for a long time. Phil Dawson.
That's true. Yes. Yeah, good point. Phil Dawson going long.
And you guys have one, too, on the punter side of things. Shane Lechler kicked until he was in his early to mid-40s, right?
Correct. And Lechler was only replaced 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And the guy that replaced him has been cut now. Not that I remember that part of it, but just to point it out. They didn't exactly replace him with Gostkowski, is what I'm telling you. But, yeah, no, that position, kicker and punter, had been the one to get really old with. But now we're watching Brady and Breeze. But you're also – what about a guy like Frank Gore? Frank Gore is still rolling.
It's all relative to position or whatever else. Considering that Frank Gore plays running back, the fact that he is still getting meaningful carries in the NFL is a big deal. We have reverse old man strength, as pointed out by a texter from the 254.
Yes.
Pedro Martinez pushing Don Zimmer to the ground like he did.
Oh,
or Zimmerman to the ground like he did.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it Zimmer or Zimmerman? Zimmer.
Just Zimmer.
Zimmer to the ground like he did, what was it, during the World Series or the playoffs?
That was a weird moment. By the way, 37 for Frank Gore. At that age, that position, you're right. That's absolutely an old man athlete there. Yeah, the Zimmer thing was weird, and it's going to sound like I'm picking sides, and full disclosure, I always pick Boston over New York in those discussions because I'm not a Yankees guy, but... My thing there was, hey, If we're all going to respect everybody that's on the field equally, then you can't get on Pedro Martinez for, oh my God, you pushed an old man down. Stop.
Yeah.
No, he didn't. He pushed a coach down from the other team that rushed him.
Yeah.
Now, you can say whatever you want at that point, but he did not roll on him in a wheelchair. He did not have a cane. He is an older man at that point, yes.
And if I'm remembering correct, he kind of Olay'd him, too, where he did grab him by the shoulder and throw him down, but he was more getting him past.
It's
him.
Not like he grabbed his shirt and hit him with the last punch that Nolan hit Ventura with.
Crowning him.
Right? Because if you let Don Zimmer come at you and he does something, then you're the guy that got beat up by Zimmer. And the Nolan thing looks like nothing.
Yeah.
Nolan's 46. What was Don Zimmer that day? 80? I mean, come on.
This person's asking if Happy Gilmore fighting Bob Barker counts. Sure, we'll count that today. Because Bob Barker laid an ass-whooping on Happy.
I don't know if I've ever heard the full story of... I'd love to hear the full creative story of the group of people that got that to happen and how Bob agreed. And to explain the tenor of that scene to him and the fact that he agreed to all of it, that was really good.
Well, still to this day, some of the best stories that you hear about, and I guess you're hearing less now because these guys are starting to die or are mostly dead at this point, but hearing about some young mugger trying to jack an older person that they just see on the streets, only to find out that this dude was on the beaches of Normandy in World War II.
Oh, so I picked the only Navy SEAL in the neighborhood. Okay.
He broke my wrist. I don't even know how.
I always imagine it like young dude wakes up in the hospital. And one of his boys, or maybe it's his sister that's so disappointed because she knows he's leading a life of crime, just leans over the bed. He wakes up and says, what happened? And all they say to him is like, Navy SEAL, and then just walks away. Or he was special op. He was in the 101st Airborne. That's how you messed up.
Exactly.
I'm going to go get something behind the vending machine.
Great name, Texter. Wasn't Julio Franco like 49 when he retired?
Yes.
Great old guy. Yeah, 49 when he retired, and then I think he played for another 5 to 10 years down in Mexico. He went over to Japan for a while, may have done a stint in Korea.
Baseball's got great examples. Franco is definitely one. I'm a Braves guy, so Otis Nixon, who looked 60 when he was 30.
Gosh.
Otis played till he was like 59. Maybe the best example ever is Satchel Paige, who couldn't play Major League Baseball for a certain time, but he debuts at like 42 and is still a stud.
Oh, dominant.
For years after that. So that's another guy I always think of.
I'm trying to think of basketball players who qualify, and I can't remember if this guy just had that Otis Nixon way about him, just in terms of always looking older than he actually was. But Robert Parrish is somebody who belongs on that list, right?
Robert Parrish does. Kareem played for 21, 22 years, something like that. One of my favorites was Moses Malone. Even though Moses came straight out of high school, it felt like Moses Malone played 35 years in the NBA.
True.
He played a long time. Tree Rollins was a guy that played for a while.
Tree Rollins, yeah.
Tree felt like 48 when he left.
Oh,
I mean, he
was
old at the end. So give us your favorite old athletes on Nolan Robin Ventura Anniversary Day. We're going to have a fun discussion today because it is badass when the older folks get after. I'm sitting here at 45 today, so Nolan Ryan is a year older than what I am right now when he beat up Robin. Ventura was like 23, 24.
Ventura was not a small dude either.
No.
I think he was like 6'2", 6'3".
And Kevin Dunn and other college baseball freaks would tell you Robin Ventura is one of the greatest college baseball players that ever lived.
Yeah.
He was an absolute stud. He's one of the best ever. And he was in his prime when this happened. This is Robin Ventura at his prime in the majors.
All right. Whoever sent this, you just need to stop. Greg Oden was like 65 when he played in the NBA.
Greg Oden. His knees were 72.
Well done.
But he was not. We'll talk about that as we move on. Also, we've got to get into the Big 12 today. Baby steps. They're not letting us know everything yet, but at least we know what they're thinking of. And Trey, you got this right yesterday. We'd seen reporting and heard reporting that a conference-only schedule is not what they were looking at.
Yeah.
It was probably going to be some kind of a plus. And what we're looking at is a 9+1 conference games plus one non-conference in the Big 12.
And that one has to be at home.
Yes.
So it's a version of what the ACC did.
Which officially cancels out any idea you have about an ACC idea.
As soon as I read that, I was disappointed.
Me too.
My only hope was that the Big 12 would figure out a way to do this while also still getting some marquee matchups in with these non-conference games. And that's no longer a possibility, Chad. And what it means in all likelihood, for the Longhorns, let's say, is that they're going to be facing UTEP, I would assume, with what was originally looked at as week three. So we'll see the Longhorns. And again, this is not official by any means. This is my guess here.
Yeah.
That we see the Longhorns cancel South Florida. Obviously, the LSU game is already canceled. And they have that UTEP game week three before getting a week off with conference season getting going.
So you still start on the 19th maybe.
Right.
For them if they want to. They've got to figure out what that date is. We didn't find that out yesterday. All we know is it's 9+1 and like you said, has to be a home game. So if you wanted the backyard brawl to come back, yeah, it can't. Because the ACC would tell you the game has to happen at Heinz Field and the Big 12 would say, no, it has to happen in West Virginia. Despite the fact that those two places are like 60-something miles apart, that game cannot occur. And Trey, if you don't want to move the schedule in terms of the place, it also means that the Skillet game is gone because TCU is scheduled to be at SMU. SMU has their other non-conference games are on the road, so they want that home game. So unless the Big 12 moves on that, we just lost the Skillet game for 2020, and TCU's got to find somebody else to play. And as of right now, they don't have another one scheduled. They've already lost two. They lost the SWAC opponent, and they lost Cal. If you take SMU from them, TCU officially has to find someone today, and they start the discussions with, you know, whoever it is.
I don't want to bury the Big 12 too much for this because I think this was a better option than them saying, you know what? Teams in the conference, you be you. If you want to go three non-conference games, you do that. You want to go two, you want to go one, you want to go zero. It's totally up to you on this. And I get why they are insisting on this being a home game so that you have as much control over the environment and circumstances as possible. But if you're being that hypervigilant about it, why are you allowing these schools to schedule a team that is not going to have nearly as much to work with resource-wise to ensure that they are bringing a healthy squad to you?
That's a great point because, yeah, you are not able to trust at the level of, well, they're another Power Five, and so we trust that they'll be able to,
exactly,
to do that. Like you would have been able to trust an LSU or a Tennessee, but of course that other conference took the game away. So, we'll break down all these different options, different teams. What I wonder, Trey, the Big 12 has an opportunity that no other Power 5 has because every other, you know, ACC's got to add two games, the SEC's got to add two, and then everybody else has to add one. Big 10's got to add one, Pac-12's got to add one game to get them to 10. The Big 12 doesn't have to add a conference game for their plan, right? So what I wonder is, will this Phil Steele magazine that's in front of me still be valid for the Big 12? Are they going to leave the conference schedule like it is? Right now it goes to that November 28th weekend. You could give yourself the next weekend as an off weekend. This is what the ACC did, as an off weekend or as a fill weekend. Maybe we need to push a game to that point, but leave it open. Then the next weekend, December 12th, could be your championship game. Or do you want to push all the way to the 19th, which is when the SEC and the Pac-12, I think, have said that they want to have their championship games?
Yep.
So you've already set things up for, you know, bye weeks and everything. Once you get to conference, do you now want to just rip that all apart? Do you want to rip up all the carpeting and put in hardwood floors? Or do you want to still try to save the old carpet?
These are all great questions you're asking. Hopefully the Big 12 is asking themselves these same questions, Chad. As far as moving the conference championship game, though, it's a little bit trickier for them to do that, to move it to that
19th?
December 19th date.
Okay.
Because, now they can move it back to December 12th if necessary, but if they need to move it back to the 19th, that following Saturday, the problem is that the UIL has high school football championships scheduled for classes 1 through 4A. December 16th through 19th, and that Sunday, December 20th, the Cowboys play a home game versus the 49ers.
Mm.
So the contingency plan, according to The Athletic, is playing the Big 12 championship game at Globe Life Field.
Whoa. Man, if they have to do it on the 19th.
On the 19th.
The Cowboy game definitely is an issue. By the time we get to December, if the schedule has been moved enough in high school football, that wouldn't be championship weekend anymore, though, would it?
For 1 through 4A, it would.
Because they didn't change their schedule.
But okay. Maybe.
I wasn't thinking of that.
Maybe.
I got you.
Because you're right about that. normally 1 through 4, I think, plays Wednesday, Thursday, maybe a little bit of Friday.
Right, they start in the midweek.
Maybe they could talk to them and say, although you're also running the risk of how many kids going through those locker rooms over the course of 3 days to then try and get things turned around for a game,
right,
which traditionally has happened, 11 a.m. on that Saturday. It's the first of those conference championship games. It probably is a little bit too much, so they're better off maybe just shifting things to Globe Life Field.
Yeah, to me it just feels like, I think the 12th makes all kinds of sense. I'm just pulled up randomly Oklahoma State's schedule. We all know they end with Texas on November 27th, so just take that next week off. Unless you need to replace games or move games, and then go on the 12th. I mean, play it on the 12th. That, to me, makes sense. And for some teams, it'll be easy to determine who your non-conference is. For some, it'll be a little tougher. And then the off time is going to be interesting to watch for Oklahoma. If they still want to play Missouri State on August 29th, that's fine. But then you'd have 4 weeks off before you played conference, if you left everything the same with conference play. So they have to look at, like, that's not going to make any sense. You can't give somebody 4 weeks off. Texas Tech would have a situation where they could play UTEP on the 5th of September. Then they'd get 2 weeks off before conference. Then I think they'd play 2 conference games and then have another week off. So they're just going to have to go in and look at all the bye week stuff and think, do we want to leave it the same? Can we leave our conference stuff scheduled, or are we going to have to rip part of it out?
So Oklahoma is also scheduled to play Army on September 26th. Army has already had a couple of games postponed, including their season opener at home versus Bucknell.
Mm-hmm.
They are scheduled to open the season against Rice on 9/12, but that 19th is open for Army right now.
So you can move that.
If you're Oklahoma now, do you want to face a team that poses a greater threat to you in terms of being able to beat you? And they have shown the ability to stick with big dogs early in the season over these last couple of years, including a game in Norman a few years ago. And this game would actually be at Army. Do you try and move that up a week and play that game instead of Missouri State at the end of August?
And then you'd have to get Army to agree to come to Norman. You have to get them to change it.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Because it can't be a roadie.
No, you're right. That's why they'll ultimately stick with Missouri State.
So then with Missouri State, you got to look at their schedule and how much could they move up. Would you move them up a couple of weeks to make it a little more normal? There's things that need to be figured out. You mentioned this one. Oklahoma State, Tulsa feels like the game to play. Do you still play it on September 12th? Kansas has that Southern Illinois game. There's an early conference game on the 12th with Baylor playing Kansas.
Okay.
That's the first conference game that's scheduled. Do you still
Baylor, Kansas? That's great.
Do you still do that game on the 12th, or do you try to move everything back to the 26th? Iowa State plays Tech on the 26th, and K-State plays West Virginia. That's where it feels like you could say, all right, the conference is beginning, you know, on this day. But Texas doesn't start till October 3rd.
Yeah.
They play Kansas State in Manhattan on October 3rd. So for Texas, if you take USF away and go UTEP, you'd start on the 29th. Like you said, you'd get your week off, then you'd jump into conference, and then it's K-State, I think, followed immediately by Oklahoma.
And October 10th is when the Longhorns are scheduled to play Oklahoma right now, and reports also suggest that neither Texas nor Oklahoma was all that crazy about scheduling a home and home. Mm-hmm. Even with the state fair called off this year, they still want to play that game in the Cotton Bowl with limited fans in attendance, which I'm totally cool with because, you know, they're going to take the necessary safeguards. Chad, if I go to one Texas game this year, it's going to be that game.
Well,
and I may be paying a heavy price for that, too.
You mean ticket price or actual price?
There's a couple different ways
a couple different prices
that you can handle that.
Well, the other thing with that is we all know how the scheduling works with that building and that game. What in that situation for Texas and OU fans that actually are going to be able to go to that game? What could be safer? Obviously, sitting at home would be safer. What could be safer if you're going to the game than to go to a stadium where in that particular year they'll have one game?
Because
I don't know if the other game will even happen. That other game is a historically black college game with Southern and somebody that plays there. And I think those conferences have agreed to move it.
Is it Prairie View, maybe.
I can't remember if that's Southern and Prairie View, or I think they call it the Southern Classic or whatever. That's the other game.
Inconsequential point taken, Chad. You're absolutely right.
So
if there is a neutral spot that two teams can meet up to play a game like that, it is something like that venue.
It is it's the most big time college football venue that I can think of where nobody goes and nobody plays games other than a couple times a year, and now you're even cutting that in half. That's a decent argument to me. You don't have 300,000 roaming around, right? We're going to let X number of people get in here, and we're going to social distance you. We're going to spray this joint down where nobody's been since last year's game. We think that's a pretty safe environment. What do you think? And the Big 12, those two schools will probably respond with, yeah, let's give it a shot.
And by the way, if you've been to that game before, you know how crazy things are around there, not just with the fair happening, but people who are showing up to the fairgrounds to hang out and party and not necessarily go into the game, there's not going to be any of that this year.
Right.
You have to get in to the fairgrounds with a ticket to get into the game because the fair's not open.
Yeah, it's gonna
there's going to be so many less people versus what we're used to. I mean, there's at most going to be 50% of what is close to 100,000 or 90,000, whatever that number is, but it's probably going to be closer to 25%.
For the people that have seen it, you're going to be walking into the last scene of Zombieland.
Yeah.
That's basically going to be, without the zombies, we hope. But that's basically what it's going to be like. It's going to be a deserted amusement park, essentially, that you're walking through to get to that game. Texas and OU saying they are still planning on the Cotton Bowl. Let us know what you think. If you're a Texas fan, Big 12 fan, how does the 9+1 hit you? We will talk about that. Plus, one Big 12 coach was not thinking about scheduling yesterday because he was having to deal with a little bit of an issue on his football team. We'll get you the Gary Patterson update. Coach Patterson and apologize today. We'll read the apology and discuss it coming up on The Horn.
That's what I'm talking about.
So during the break, Trey just said, name a band. Don't think. Name the first band that pops into your head. And I've been thinking about these guys a lot lately because they were almost my band that's underrated for the music survey. I love Living Color. The first three albums are just amazing to me. Saw them live a couple times. So we're going Living Color all day?
Living Color Radio. So I had the option of going with more Living Color, but there are also acts such as Blind Melon, Soundgarden, The Black Crowes, Helmets, Primus, Faith No More, Anthrax. There are some good choices to select from throughout the rest of the afternoon.
Very cool. Well, shout out to Corey and the guys from Living Color. It was a hell of a show back in the day. I saw them open for the Stones. That was a good performance at the Cotton Bowl. The first time I ever saw Living Color. All right, if you have not jumped in, feel free on the Specs text line 337-3776. We're getting some good responses. Somebody reminds us it is Grambling and Prairie View that is the other game at the Cotton Bowl, but they're not doing that because the SWAC has moved their scheduling. So, yeah, it'd be a pretty safe environment in terms of how many other games are there, how many people are going in and out of the Cotton Bowl. It would just be Texas and Oklahoma, really, especially since you closed the fair. Others,
are they going to open up the beer stands before the game?
I don't know. I don't know what you do. Do you do the corny dog stands,
Fletcher's,
and everything? I think they're going to have to. They need that protocol figured out. Let's get Bob Bowles beyond that today so he can decide by the game.
I've actually read a study that corn dogs help with protecting an individual from COVID.
I've heard that if you put a Fletcher's corn dog inside your mask, it protects better than if you use an air conditioner filter.
And if you put mustard on that corn dog, it helps with herd immunity.
Yes, absolutely. Then I think you're automatically herd immune with the mustard.
It's like getting the vaccine 3 years in a row.
Absolutely. If you put mayonnaise on it, you automatically get COVID-19. You know that?
Yes.
You know that's how it works?
I'm pushing that one now.
That's right. All right, this one says, your favorite old athlete stories we're looking for today because it's the anniversary of Nolan Ryan doing that to Robin Ventura. Pete Rose and George Foreman. had major accomplishments into their mid-40s. Pete Rose broke the all-time hit record. George Foreman won the heavyweight championship. Yeah, I double-checked. Foreman was 45 when he sent Michael Moore to sleep and got a belt that night. Somebody else mentioned Kevin Willis as playing as an older guy. He definitely did. Herschel Walker doing all kinds of things past a certain age. And what else? Oh, Tom Watson. Remember when Tom Watson, if he hits one putt, yeah, he'd have won the British at like 58.
Yeah, that would have been crazy.
Oh, I was rooting for him that day.
Back to George Foreman for a second. More impressive, him winning the heavyweight title at 45 or the George Foreman grill?
More impressive?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Because the George Foreman grill has impacted countless lives in the last, 25 years.
Oh, I whipped up some stuff on the George Foreman grill. I'm not going to lie to you. I had one.
We use it for a panini press and some other things at home
excellent.
To this day.
I'm still going to say him winning a title at that age is more impressive, but the product was impressive. And do you remember who they offered it to first? It's a great trivia question. What entertainer turned it down before George Foreman said yes?
Entertainer. Okay, I was going to say Deion Sanders, who passed to go with the Deion Sanders hot dog cooker.
No, I have to choose my words carefully there. There's an athletic quality to it, but technically not a competitive athlete.
Hulk Hogan?
Correct.
Oh, wow.
Yes, Hulk Hogan said no to it.
And then, clearly, Hulk knew what he was doing.
And Foreman got it. They could have made him red and yellow. It would have been so cool.
That is true. And Hulk Hogan, yeah.
It would have taken the grease away from the vitamins. Oh, man.
It's the beginning of the end for Hulkster.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Somebody brought up Buddy Ryan and Kevin Gilbride. That was just fun watching two old guys fight there.
Yes, it was.
On the sideline.
And not very much fun for me as an Oilers fan because my coaching staff was that dysfunctional. But that was also Buddy Ryan's MO wherever he was, is trying to start ish with the OC.
That is true. This one simply says Ricky Henderson still thinks he can play. Yes, he does. And Ricky Henderson certainly has his place.
And he would say it like that, too. Ricky Henderson still thinks he can play.
That is exactly what he would say. All right, so if you missed the Gary Patterson update from the story yesterday, here is the Gary Patterson apology from this morning. It says, I met with our seniors and leadership council last night about how we move forward as a team together. We are committed as individuals and as a program to fighting racial injustice of any kind. I apologize for the use of a word that in any context is unacceptable. I have always encouraged our players to do better and be better, and I must live by the same standards. Our players, past and present, have always been the strength of our program. These men are and will always be my motivation and driving force. So that was the apology. Current and former players did support Gary Patterson last night and into some of the discussions. To me, Trey, this one boils down to kind of what it did in the Drew Brees story, the thing at Clemson, and some others. It's about what these guys think is in Gary Patterson's heart. And deep down, if they think Gary Patterson is an evil, horrible, terrible person who's out to, you know, do horrible things, that's one discussion. But at least it sounds like from some of these players, they don't think he's got evil in his heart. It was just a discussion that they needed to have, and maybe they've moved, you know, been able to move on. We'll see.
You and I differentiate a little bit on this one. As a matter of fact, to lift the curtain up a little bit for the people out there, I yelled at you prior to the show today, so I would like to apologize for that. But that's how passionate I feel about Gary Patterson not just being old guy who doesn't see color, stumbling into a mistake that he made and then not realizing it when his team addressed that with him the following day. Gary Patterson has shown a pattern of abuse in the past. And as a matter of fact, the conversation that he was having with that player leading up to that, I think proves that Gary Patterson knew exactly what he was doing. Even if he wasn't calling the kid the N-word, the fact that he was using that word, understanding how much of a trigger that is, an understandable trigger that, by the way, for a lot of people, regardless of the era that we're in, Gary Patterson knew exactly what he's doing, and he doubled down on it the next day. I'm a little bit surprised that Gary Patterson, if this ends up being the end of it, gets off as scot-free as he is. I would assume that TCU doles out some sort of punishment to him, whether it's him having to sit out the first couple of days of practice or...
You thought some kind of suspension might be
some sort of suspension. I wouldn't necessarily think that he would get fired for this, but Look, Gary Patterson is getting sued right now by a former player who is accusing him of bullying him and threatening him that if he doesn't get back on the field, despite the fact that he was seriously injured, that he would take his scholarship away from him.
Yeah, I think the line that would be drawn and only the players know if he crossed it consistently would be, is Gary Patterson an intense coach that you could argue gets into some bullying tactics, or is he a coach that players have thought for a while or years or whatever that he might be racist? Those are two very different things. It doesn't sound like enough players are commenting on social media saying, man, I've always known that guy was a racist, and this doesn't surprise me at all. Like, I don't feel like I'm seeing that reaction a lot.
And I don't think that Gary Patterson is necessarily a racist. That's not my point here. My point is that Gary Patterson is a tone-deaf POS who likes to bully people from a position of power, and that's what was happening a couple of days ago. This dude was ticked about that. His teammates realize what's going on. They're upset enough to not want to go out on the field for practice. Gary Patterson comes into the locker room to see what's going on. They're like, dude, this is not cool. You use the N-word in front of this guy. And Patterson's response was not, yeah, that was stupid of me. I shouldn't have done that. He doubled down, saying, I said the word blank, saying the word, but I wasn't saying it. I wasn't calling him that. I was just saying the word, so it's not that big of a deal. And that's why they took to social media after that.
Yeah, and so we'll see if that story has now calmed down, if it goes away for Gary Patterson, or is there still something... Is there still something there?
The news cycle moves on so quickly. The fact that we're not even talking about Mike Gundy anymore, I think, proves that in a week, this will be forgotten about by most people, and it probably is for the best. But what people will keep in mind going forward is that Gary Patterson may have this in him. So if he slips up again, all of a sudden, mm-hmm. It's not going to be as forgivable.
Yeah, we will see what happens there. Gary's certainly a guy that he'll show you some temper. There's no doubt he will show you some temper. And he did in this case, and wasn't able to deal with a player one-on-one. And it's a relatively new player. It's a transfer player. So it's not a guy he's had in the program for a long time. And obviously they've had some things they needed to work out. Didn't get it worked out on a one-on-one level. Then when other members, and we don't know if it was just the whole defense or exactly how many players were in that locker room, but then it got to a team environment, and again, like Trey said, Gary wasn't able to handle it in a way that got the team to understand, okay, now kind of coach gets it. Maybe now it's gone to that stage of, okay, maybe now coach gets it. And for him to apologize and say it's unacceptable in any context, that would be important. Because if I was Gary's buddy, and a week ago, he would have asked me, hey, can I go in there and talk to the team about the N-word and say the... No, you can't.
And by the way, Gary's not even totally correct about that, because there are situations where that word being said is being done so, let's say, for artistic reasons. Like if it happens in a movie where a white actor is playing a racist character and says that word... It's terrible that you're watching out on the screen, but that's an okay scenario where it happens.
Right. For him, though, I would tell him, Gary, I can't come up with one, dude. I'm sorry, I can't.
I would tell Gary to probably try and stay away from that word going forward.
If you're walking through the locker room trying to show the players that you're like into some music that they like and it happens to be NWA, I would tell you, you could walk through there maybe playing a song, but I wouldn't sing along. I wouldn't sing along, especially specifically that word.
Or go with the radio edit version.
Maybe go with the radio edit. Yeah, there you go. All right, so that discussion continues, I'm sure. Although, like Trey said, the news cycle might turn over pretty quickly. And you've got the Big 12 scheduling stuff. So we'll see if that TCU story is done or not. We've still got the Pac-12 players wanting some things from Larry Scott. And apparently he's not giving it fast enough. We will update that story and some other college football things at 1:30. Coming up at 1 o'clock, Jerry Hamilton of Inside Texas and ESPN. We'll talk Longhorns, the schedule, Big 12. How realistic does he think college football is going to be with these conferences trying to go conference only or conference in just a little bit? Up next in the crap bag, let's talk a little basketball. There's a team and a player in the NBA. Doesn't get a lot of talk, but I wonder how much of an effect he and this team is going to have in the playoffs. I'll tell you who they are coming up on the Horn. I think you said the band name earlier, otherwise I wouldn't have known it. But isn't this Helmet?
God, this riff is so good. Yeah.
It's incredible. I remember when this song came out.
Helmet Unsung.
This was an important song for me in a video because it was the first time I saw a band that played this kind of music where somebody in the band didn't have long hair.
Oh, really?
Their drummer had this, like, flat top. It was like this really well-done kind of manicure. Like, he was just a normal-looking dude.
I've never seen them before. That's interesting.
But the music was so, you know, raw and cool and metal, and it was the stuff I was into. He just didn't have the long hair, so maybe trying to teach me a lesson there. A Living Color radio playlist is what Trey grabbed today. Had a little Living Color and now a little Helmet as well. All right, let's go. Let's get into the crab bag, talk a little basketball.
Chad's crap bag.
Crap bag. If you need an easy way to remember it, just think of a bag of crap.
And Hannah coming up, somebody tweeted at us a great quote from Nolan Ryan from back in 93 after the Robin Ventura thing. I'll get to that, I promise. But in watching basketball these last couple days, I am excited the NBA is back. The brand of basketball, at times, on its extremes, can have its problems. But I do think there's some good watchable ball out there. And there's one team that keeps blinking at me that I don't think is going to get a lot of national love because they just don't have that national love kind of fit. You're going to hear about the Lakers, obviously, with LeBron and AD. By the way, congrats to them. They're number one in the West. You're going to hear about the Clippers, obviously. And around these parts, you're going to hear about the two Texas teams that are in, Rockets and Mavs, and then maybe a third Texas team that could get in the Spurs. But the team you're not hearing a lot about in the West that I don't think anyone should forget about is Denver. They are the 3 seed, and last night, Nikola Jokic did it again. He proved that he is one freaky big center that can do a lot of strange things that centers aren't supposed to be able to do. He had 30, 12, and 10. Not 10 blocks, 10 assists. He is the center master of the normal triple-double. Denver would be your 3 seed right now. They are locked. They're not locked into the seed necessarily, but they are locked into a playoff spot. Michael Porter Jr. had 37 last night. He's been in the news recently for comments on the COVID-19 situation. Mm-hmm. But as a player, Trey, he's really good. They have a couple players injured. But if they can get Lamon Murray back, Nikola Jokic is one of my favorite players to watch. I am a sucker for a big man who can handle, for a big man who's got feet. And if you haven't watched him lately, he dropped like 25 or 30 pounds during the break. He slimmed himself up a lot. So he's even more nimble.
So that hasn't affected him in a negative way because he did use his size effectively. He obviously isn't fleet of foot, and I wouldn't say he's a bruiser necessarily, but
right.
He leveraged his body really well when he would get closer to the basket.
It still feels like he's got that ability, plus now the feet seem a little quicker, and he's still throwing these like Magic Johnson kind of passes. He's a center, a full legit 7-foot center that can bring the ball up the floor and start the offense and start distributing. He's just a problem. Right now, they'd be matching with Oklahoma City in that first round in a 3-6 matchup. That is going to be a tough matchup for them or anybody. Just don't forget about Denver. I'm fascinated by, Trey, any team in basketball and football of the two examples I'll give that are trying to do it in a different way. The Rockets, we talked about yesterday, it fascinates me that they're trying to go this small and trying to pull it off. With Denver, it's using a center like that. They're also bringing, you know, Bol Bol into the mix, mm-hmm. off the bench. Mm-hmm. And you got times where Jokic, a 7-footer, is dishing to this kid who's 7'2 or 7'3. Denver can put a lineup on the floor that is so much bigger than anything anybody could think of, where the Rockets are trying to go smaller. It's almost like the Ravens or Niners in the NFL and just trying to do business differently. So don't forget about the Denver Nuggets. And also, as long as I'm talking NBA, Spurs fans, good and bad news last night. You lost, but the team you needed to lose also lost in Memphis. You're dealing with Memphis and Portland, essentially. Portland's tied with you. And Memphis is a little bit above you. Tonight, I hate to tell you to do it, but you kind of need the Rockets to win. TNT, Rockets, and Portland. Houston winning could help you out if you're a Spurs fan. Spurs are off tonight, but might be something to watch there as the Spurs try to creep their way into the playoffs. But I enjoy that Denver team, man. They're just a different brand of vodka. And I'll admit, I like any NBA team that's using the middle part of the court as well. That's why I enjoy watching the Clippers play, because I feel like Kawhi and Paul George will use the middle of the floor a little more than some other teams will, because I don't like just you know, layups and threes, but Jokic definitely helps to fill that space for Denver.
If I'm not mistaken, Denver does need to get a little bit healthier, and I do also wonder if that lack of home court advantage that they get playing in the Mile High City ends up catching up with them during these playoffs. But they are a fun team to watch. I remember thinking that last year that they're a team that moved the ball really well, obviously going a lot of high post with Jokic. They've got some good three-point shooters. They play a decent brand of defense as well. I like your thoughts there. I think that while everybody focuses on the two LA teams, there are some other fun teams to watch that will be in the playoffs. The Rockets, of course, the Nuggets. A lot of people are high on the Blazers if they can make their way in.
Yeah.
Of course, the Mavs, while they tend to suck down the stretch, they are also a fun young team to watch as well.
Yeah, they're dangerous. You can't take your eyes off the Mavs or Rockets. Yeah. I would argue both of them. I don't think either one can make a serious run at a title, but I think they could really screw up somebody's chance to do that.
Well, even like Memphis, if they get in, Ja Morant alone is worth watching at least bits and pieces of their games. Everybody knows about Zion Williamson. If New Orleans can find their way back into this, I'd argue that the Spurs are maybe the most boring of the bunch, but then again, that's kind of always been Pop's style, and in a weird way, assuming you're not a Spurs, Rockets, or a fan of any other team that has a rivalry with San Antonio from over the years, you are rooting for them to be able to continue that streak. And even though they are on the outside looking in right now, there is still a chance.
You bring up a great point, too, with Denver. I hadn't thought of it, but when it's a sport where you're getting into the playoffs and those playoff advantages you could have really don't exist. All they're going to have is the advantage of logo. That's it. So when you get in a series, let's say it's Oklahoma City, instead of having to physically go to Denver and your lungs have to go to Denver, you don't have to do that.
Yeah.
You're just in the same place you've always been in. You're in the same hotel room. And like you said, you don't have to go deal with the Denver crowd. Back in the day, Utah was known for that too. This Utah team will be the same. Nobody has to go to Utah to physically take your body and take your ears there to deal with what that crowd can be. That's going to be something to watch as we get closer. But again, last night, LA, the Lakers locked down the one seed. It's been like a decade since they were the one seed in the playoffs.
So it's funny, Utah is already in. I mean, all seven teams are in except for Memphis, who is battling it out with Portland and San Antonio. New Orleans, Sacramento, Phoenix are also a part of things right now. I feel like Utah is a team that everybody is like, yeah, they may very well be one and done, but there is no chance that they're going to even make it to the Western Conference Finals. But I am hearing people talking up the Oklahoma City Thunder a little bit, too.
That's a team, I'll be honest, I haven't watched them play a lot. That's obviously Chris Paul, and Steven Adams is still the big guy on that team.
DGA is a running point for them. It's an interesting group. It's not a group that has necessarily a couple of superstars even. Chris Paul at one point in his career would have been that. He's not a role player at this point necessarily, but he is not what he was even 4 or 5 years ago. But they're a team that just plays really good basketball together, and you got to give Billy Donovan a lot of credit for making that happen.
One other quick mention here in the crap bag. You know I love UFC. Dana White says that Conor McGregor not going to fight in 2020, the craziness of COVID-19. He wanted to fight like 3-4 times this year, but Dana's saying he will not fight this year. You do have a couple of heavyweight fights coming up this Saturday night. Texas's own, Houston's own Derek Lewis, the Black Beast, will be fighting. That is an ESPN Plus card. And then the Miocic-Cormier rematch, part 3 of their trilogy, will be the 15th on pay-per-view. So you're going to have to shell out a little more with the ESPN Plus there. But that is something to keep on the lookout for. Also, since we are in Austin and since we cover the Longhorns and all of that, I should tell you, when a Longhorn legend has a birthday, the one and only Roger Clemens is 58 years old today. Give me a mile per hour, Trey. Mile per hour right now, Roger stretches, he limbers up, and I say, Rog, give me the four-seamer, baby. Light it up as hard as you can. What does he hit at 58?
88.
88? You don't think he can get 90? 58 years old?
Nope.
Dude, I said I thought Nolan could hit 90, and Nolan's older than Roger. Come on, get him to 90.
89.
nine.
Somebody should tweet at Roger. I'm sure he's got the setup at his home to test this thing out if he really wants to.
I wonder if he knows. I love the stories of him back in the day, man, that he would like throw on the side after starts in the majors. He'd just go out and crank it up. That's awesome.
Freakish.
Happy birthday, Roger. 58 years old. Maybe one day the truth will be the truth and he will be in the Hall of Fame. All right, coming up, let's get back into a college football discussion. Jerry Hamilton, now a part of Inside Texas, also still doing work for ESPN, one of the best recruiting guys out there. We'll ask him about the scheduling stuff, some recruiting, and how it is that he got to Inside Texas. We'll get to all of that coming up. And at 1:30, more college football news and notes. We have another player opting out, and the Big Ten. We may find out very soon in the next day or so what the Big Ten wants to do in terms of the actual schedule. All that and more coming on the Horn.